Welcome back to the Mochi Tapes, transmissions from the last frontier. We are heading back up north today, way, way up north.
Back to the cabin.
Back to the cabin. We're returning to that, you know, that dusty, abandoned place in the Girdwood Valley, Alaska. And if you've been with us for the last few of these dives, you know the drill.
We're digging through the box.
We are digging through that cardboard box. It's just this incredible treasure trove of magnetic tape that's basically an audio history of a very specific place and time.
It really is the ultimate archival find. I mean, usually when we pull a cassette out of this box, what we're hearing is a pirate radio broadcast.
Right.
We've spent a lot of time analyzing the voice of Mochi, the DJ, who hosted this show on 88.5 FM Glacier City Radio back in late 1997. We've heard him spin tracks, rant about the weather, take calls.
Exactly. We've sort of gotten to know Mochi as this voice in the dark. But today I reached into the digital folder of all these digitized tapes, and I found something completely different.
Yeah, this one stands out.
It's not a broadcast. There's no station ID, no fade-outs for commercials that, you know, don't even exist. This is a field recording.
And that's a crucial distinction. What we're looking at today is a bootleg. It's essentially a raw, live recording of a gig.
A bootleg. I love that.
And the tape itself is labeled Forest Folk, Songs from the Wood. And the liner notes, which are written in Mochi's very distinct handwriting, tell us this was recorded live at a bar called Max's.
In Girdwood.
In Girdwood, Alaska, during the fall of 1997.
And before we even press play on this thing, I just want to sit with that context for a second. Fall of 97, Girdwood, Alaska. We are talking about a ski town, a resort town, but also a dead-end town for some people.
Well, right.
And it's pre-social media. It's pre-smartphone. If you were there, you were really there. There was no escape.
That isolation is key. I mean, it's everything. When you listen to a recording like this, you aren't just hearing the music. You are hearing the room tone of a subculture that was completely, utterly cut off from the mainstream. These people were not performing for the internet. They were performing for the 30 or 40 people drinking beer in that room. That's it. It's like an acoustic archaeology dig.
I love that. Acoustic archaeology. So our mission today is to transport you, the listener, right into that smoky bar. We are going to pull up a stool, order a drink, and just deconstruct the performance of this duo, Forest Folk.
We're going to get into the music, the lyrics, the whole vibe.
Yeah, and what their set list really tells us about the anxieties and the hopes of this whole Last Frontier community.
And what's fascinating here is that even though it's a small sample size, it's just two people on a stage, it reveals a massive amount about the psychology of living on the edge of the world.
How so?
Well, it's study and duality, it's light and dark, it's the hearth and the wild, all in one set.
I love that. So let's set the stage. Who were Forest Folk? Because I have to be honest with you, the name sounds a little gentle.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, like they should be playing lutes at a Renaissance fair or something.
Yeah, it has that vibe, for sure. But the reality, it was a bit grittier than that. According to the bio notes we found tucked away in the box, Mochi actually met the two members, Brian and Melissa, at a music festival down on the Kenai Peninsula.
The Kenai, so that's south of Anchorage. We're talking serious fishing territory.
Exactly. And at the time, Brian and Melissa were part of a larger five-piece band called Stop, Drop, and Roll.
Stop, Drop, and Roll, great name.
It is. But Mochi, along with members of another local group we've heard mentioned before, the Photon Band, they saw something specific in just the two of them. In Brian and Melissa.
So what did they do?
They invited them up to Girdwood.
So it's almost like a recruitment drive.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you two, leave your band, come to the mountains with us.
That's essentially what it was, yes.
Yeah.
They were invited to play a small festival called Girdstock.
Girdstock. Of course it was.
Right, at Max's bar. And apparently the chemistry was just instant, not just between Brian and Melissa as a duo, but between the band and the town itself.
So they clicked with the place.
They fell in love with Girdwood, and they ended up coming back multiple times throughout the fall of 1997 just to perform.
And Mochi was there to document it. I was looking at the scan of the cassette cover art that he created for this tape. It is peak 1997 DIY aesthetic.
It really is. It's a high contrast black and white photocopy, a montage.
Yeah. On the left, you've got the silhouette of the guitar player, that's Brian, and on the right, the singer, Melissa.
Right.
And they're just framed by these really dense, dark woods.
But it's the lighting that gets you.
It is. There is this massive, completely blown out sun flare that's just bursting through the trees right between them. It's almost blinding.
That single image is the perfect primer for the audio we're about to hear. That sun flare. that represents the light that we are going to hear Melissa constantly searching for in her lyrics.
But they're in shadow?
But the figures themselves are silhouettes. They're in the shadow. It visually sets up the entire thematic conflict of the set. This desperate search for warmth and light in a place that is, you know, dark and cold for half the year.
And the text is so simple. It just says, "Music from the Wood, live at Max's in Girdwood, Alaska, 1997.
It feels like a manifesto.
It's a statement of place. The word isn't just a location, it's a state of mind.
Okay, so let's get into the set itself. The tape is split pretty clearly between the two of them. We have Melissa and we have Brian, and they bring very different energies to the stage.
They do. Melissa is the anchor. If you analyze her vocal delivery, her lyrical themes, she represents this desire for stability. She is the search for home.
I spent a lot of time listening to the track Shine Down on Me. Now, the audio quality, we have to manage expectations here. It's a bootleg.
It's raw.
It's super raw. You can hear the air in the room. You can hear a glass clinking somewhere in the back. But honestly, that makes it better.
It creates intimacy. It grounds you. Yeah. And how would you describe her voice in that setting?
It's just raw. It's got this raspy, really emotive quality to it. She's not polishing the notes. She's feeling them. And the guitar is doing this very minimalist sort of heartbeat-like strumming pattern. It's almost hypnotic. And the lyrics, right away, they introduce that theme we saw on the cover art.
Oh, completely. The central metaphor is right there in the title. She's singing about waiting for the light to shine down on her. The line is, "Now I can't wait for the light to shine down on me."
Okay, so think about the context. Fall in Alaska. The days are getting shorter by 6 minutes every single day.
6 minutes a day. Wow.
The sun is literally disappearing. So waiting for the light isn't just some vague metaphor for spiritual happiness. It's a physiological need. It's about fighting off the darkness, literally and figuratively.
She mentions searching for years to find peace. She sings, "Through all of my journeys, I found one thing that loves the only thing that makes me whole."
And that's a very traditional folk sentiment. It's almost hymnal in a way. But she pairs it with this kind of spiritual desperation. She references, "Oh, Lord," and she's looking up to the heavens. She's pleading with the universe to cure her loneliness.
There's a line that just hit me so hard. "Lived my life downhearted with a loneliness that chilled me to the bone."
Chilled me to the bone. There it is again, the environment seeping right into the lyrics. In Alaska, the cold is a predator. It's a character in the story. It chills you to the bone. And she's using that physical sensation to describe her emotional state.
But the song does resolve in hope. She believes she won't be alone in the end. And when the song finishes, you hear the applause. And it's startling because you suddenly remember, oh, right, she just poured this incredibly vulnerable prayer out to a room full of people drinking beer and wearing flannel.
That's the paradox of the bar gig, isn't it? You are stripping your soul bare while someone in the back is ordering a pitcher of amber ale. But that vulnerability, that's what connects. It bonds the room.
And that theme of searching for a happy place, a home, it just continues right into the next track, Country Girl.
Uh-huh.
This one felt different to me, though. It was less of a prayer, more of a story.
It's a narrative song, for sure. It follows a very specific, almost classic arc. It
starts with the fairy tale setup. Once upon a time, there was a girl, eyes of blue, hair of gold.
She establishes the innocent archetype immediately. And what is the innocent's ultimate dream?
Well, it's the American dream, right? She wants a family.
Yeah.
A house full of love. She wants to grow old with somebody.
But, as is so often the case in these folk narratives, the dream hits a wall.
Big time. She finds a man. But the lyrics, they imply he brought her down, that he treated her poorly. So what does she do? She flees. She moves to the city.
And this is the classic city mouse versus country mouse conflict. In the song, the city is where she initially feels like she can finally breathe. She works in a garden, but does it last?
No, it's a false promise. The city isn't the answer either. She ends up moving back to the country, and she meets a country boy just up the road. And the resolution, the happy ending, is them just sitting on the porch, singing, because being together makes them happy.
Now, think about the audience at Max's bar. Girdwood is a town that is defined by not being the city. It's separated from Anchorage by 40 miles of, frankly, a pretty dangerous highway. It's separated from the lower 48 by an entire country. When Melissa sings about rejecting the city and finding true happiness on a porch in the country, she is validating the life choices of every single person in that room.
She's telling them, you were right to drop out. You were right to move to the woods.
Exactly. It's a reinforcement of their social identity. The song says that real happiness isn't in the hustle, it's in the simplicity.
But then, But then she throws a curveball that I absolutely did not see coming on a folk date from 1997.
I know which one you mean.
She covers Bon Jovi.
Cowboy, or as most people know it, Wanted Dead or Alive.
Right. But the tape list just calls it Cowboy.
Yeah.
And honestly, hearing a raspy acoustic folk version of this massive, you know, 80s arena rock anthem, it just hits differently.
It completely recontextualizes the lyrics. When Bon Jovi sings it, it's about the burden of being a rock god. It's about private jets and stadiums. When Melissa sings it in a tiny bar in Alaska, lines like, "I'm a cowboy on a steel horse I ride," take on a totally different weight.
"I've seen a million faces and I've rocked them all."
Yeah.
In this context, it feels so much less about fame and more about just the pure weariness of being on the road. She sings about driving all night just to get back home.
And that line, "Sometimes you tell the day by the bottle that you drink," that resonates so heavily in a seasonal worker town. Girdwood attracts people who are, by nature, transient.
What drifters?
They're drifters. People who work the fishing season, then they work the ski season. They're always moving.
Faces are so cold. It's that feeling of isolation again. It keeps coming back.
Exactly. It connects right back to "Shine Down on Me," the loneliness. But whereas that song looks to God for help, Cowboy just accepts the grit of it all. It's a resignation. I'm a cowboy. It's an identity.
She follows that up with a song called "Dreamer," which she introduces on the tape as an original. This one felt like she was stepping away from the characters,
yeah,
you know, the country girl, the cowboy, and talking about herself again.
Yeah, it addresses the internal struggle much more directly.
She admits to standing on the brink of insanity. I mean, that is a heavy, heavy admission. She talks about fear being in her mind.
But look at the pivot she makes. She decides to throw it away and just start a new day. It's a song about agency. It's about choosing optimism.
"Sometimes the sun never seems to shine, but I choose to see the light that shines inside of me."
There it is again. The internal sun versus the external lack of sun.
That's the whole theme.
It suggests that for this community, or at least for Melissa, survival is a mental game. You have to manufacture your own light when the environment refuses to provide it for you.
And finally, for her part of the set, we have "Think Twice." This one feels like the thesis statement for why anyone moves to the woods in the first place.
It really does. The central conflict here is the commotion and confusion of daily life. She's just tired of it.
She wants to wake up with sunshine on her face. We can't escape the sunshine motif and see nothing but,
yeah,
well, the tape says nothing but in the place, which I take to mean just peace, just open space.
She explicitly mentions having an idealistic view. She believes people should be living in a home society, living in love.
A home society. That sounds almost utopian, like she wants to start a commune or something.
It's very consistent with the counterculture vibe of the late 90s, especially in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. This idea that mainstream society is noisy and confused, and the answer is to get out just for a minute, to think twice.
So Melissa's set is this beautiful, cohesive journey. "I'm lonely, the world is cold, the city is bad, but if I look inside myself and I find a simple life, I can find the sun." It's lovely. She is the hearth.
It is. It's grounding. But then we have Brian.
Oh boy. Brian, talk about a pivot. If Melissa is the hearth, Brian is, I don't know, blizzard outside, the wolf at the door.
Brian is the wild. He is the chaos. And what makes Forest Folks so fascinating as a concept is that you have these two people, who were a couple at the time, sharing a stage, but presenting two completely different ways of processing the world.
Right.
Melissa looks inward for peace. Brian looks outward and sees, well, hallucinations.
Let's start with his first track, "Together in Heaven." Now, the title sounds sweet, "Together in Heaven," but the lyrics are intense.
It's a love song, ostensibly, but it just vibrates with anxiety. He starts with this grand cosmic imagery. Souls were once together in heaven, danced in the clouds, flew with the dove.
It's very predestined soulmate stuff, classic folk trope. But then he slams right into this carnal desperation. The line is, "I see your legs and I want to beg."
It's a jarring shift, isn't it? One minute we're flying with the doves, and the next we're on the floor begging over someone's legs.
"And then I see your lips and I want to kiss. And I see your eyes and I want to cry." It feels a bit manic, almost unhinged.
It completely lacks the calm resolve of Melissa's songs. Brian's delivery and his writing, it just seems to be vibrating at a much higher, more chaotic frequency. He talks about being together since the first raindrop fell.
The time of creation.
The time of creation. It's this huge cosmic imagery applied to a crush. It feels obsessive.
And that vibration gets explicitly chemical in the very next track, which is called "Microdots."
Okay, we have to pause here. Microdots. For anyone who's uninitiated, we are talking about a specific delivery system for LSD.
And he doesn't even hint at it. He's not using clever metaphors. He just lists the menu. Microdots, shrooms, cocaine.
But this isn't a party anthem. This is not let's get high and have fun. This song sounds terrifying.
It's a bad trip song. Or at the very least, a very, very complicated one. He mentions head rushes and trips that kill. He says, I can't come down because you know it. I'm in mental pain.
Mental pain. That is such a stark contrast to the sunshine that Melissa was singing about just a few minutes before. Melissa was fighting insanity by finding inner light. Brian is inducing insanity and finding mental pain.
But the imagery he uses to describe the hallucination, I mean, it's incredibly vivid. Turquoise mountains, tangerine skies, bushes that talk, burnt sienna stars.
A sun wrapped in silver spreading wisdom. That is genuine psychedelic poetry. He captures the beauty of the altered state, the golden meadows where wizards abide, but he crashes it against the stark reality of the inability to stop.
He keeps repeating the line, born again and again and again.
It just sounds exhausting, being stuck in this loop of rebirth while, you know, snorting cocaine.
This song really reflects the darker side of those counterculture elements you often find in these remote towns. People go there to escape, but sometimes they just bring their habits with them. Or they use substances to cope with the profound isolation.
Absolutely. It's not all acoustic guitars on the porch. Sometimes it's wizards and trips that kill. It's the reality of the ski bum lifestyle. It's high highs and very, very low lows.
That gritty realism continues in his next song, Rose-Colored Glasses. But here he kind of steps out of his own head and looks at the society around him.
He adopts a persona here. He sings, now I'm a stew bum, I got fingerless gloves.
A stew bum? That's an old school term for a vagrant or a drunk, right?
It is. He's embodying the marginalized. And from that vantage point, he sets up another contrast. On one hand, nature is this benevolent force. Sunshine sang to me, treetops talk to me, butterflies dance.
So nature is his friend, but society.
Society is a war zone, bullets are flying, social warfare, politicians are trying to be quiet.
Why can't we all just be brothers? It's this incredibly poignant plea for peace from the perspective of someone on the absolute bottom rung of the social ladder.
And the irony of the title, Rose-Colored Glasses. He says he's looking at life through them, but what he's describing, social warfare, dying people, is anything but rosy.
So what do you think he means by that?
It suggests that maybe the rose-colored glasses are the only way to survive that reality. Or maybe he means that the drugs, the microdots, are the rose-colored glasses that allow him to see the talking treetops.
It feels like he's seeing the beauty of nature in spite of the ugliness of human society.
Which brings us to the peak of this empathy in his set, a song called Downtown Sally. If rose-colored glasses was general social commentary, this is specific. This is deeply personal.
Brian actually introduces this song on the tape. He gives a little bit of a story. He says it's about a place called Solotna.
And he mentions two specific figures, Lady Lou and Downtown Sally.
Lady Lou sounds like quite the character. A bag lady who steals food, but as he sings, graduated from Yale.
It's the classic trope of the fallen genius, the person on the street who has a secret high-status past. Whether it's true or just a local legend, it adds this layer of dignity to her character. She isn't just a bag lady. She's a scholar who lost her way.
And then there's Downtown Sally. Uh-huh. And Brian makes a point to clarify right in the intro and again in the lyrics. Sally was a guy.
This is a really significant moment on this tape. You have to remember, we are in 1997 in a rough and tumble Alaskan town, and Brian is singing a folk song about a gender nonconforming person, or perhaps a trans woman, with immense empathy and respect.
He doesn't treat it as a joke at all. He sings, Sally taught me how to walk, taught me how to dance. There's a mentorship there, a real friendship.
And a lot of tragedy. Downtown Sally, her daddy died, her mommy died, her best friend died. He just catalogs the losses in Sally's life one after another.
And then that refrain hits you. Sally made me cry.
It's such a poignant look at homelessness and mental health. He mentions Lady Lou, thinking she's a god placed upon a guy. These are people living in their own realities on the fringe of the fringe, and Brian isn't mocking them. He's immortalizing them in a song.
It's heartbreaking. So you have Melissa singing about wanting a home and Brian singing about the homeless.
That's the synthesis, isn't it? That's the forest folk identity in a nutshell.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. How do these two fit together? Because on paper, you know, psychedelic drug trip and country girl dream should not work in the same set.
But they complement each other perfectly. Melissa grounds the entire set. She provides the emotional center, the romance, the relatable human desire for safety and warmth and light.
And Brian. He expands it.
Brian expands the set into the cosmos, into social commentary, and into the gritty, sometimes ugly reality of street life. You need both of those things to capture the reality of life in a place like Girdwood.
Right. It's not just one thing.
It's beautiful and peaceful, but it's also wild and chaotic and unpredictable.
So the wood, in Songs from the Wood, isn't just pretty trees. It's also the dark forest where the wizards and the stewbums live.
Exactly. And that combination, that tension, it leads us to the finale.
Yeah.
The track that brings everyone and everything together.
Max's place.
This is the big number. And you notice the sonic shift immediately. It isn't just the duo anymore.
No, the tape notes say that members of the Photon Band, specifically Pete and Romero, join in on lead guitar for this track, and you can hear it instantly. The energy just shifts from acoustic folk to this raucous driving jam session.
There's a great backstory to this song, too. According to Mochi's notes, it was originally titled Sebastian's Place, but Brian, on Halloween night, changed the lyrics on the fly to fit the venue they were playing in.
Improvised localization. I love that. But there's a disclaimer, right? The notes claim the song doesn't describe the actual Max's bar.
Right. A classic, any resemblance to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental type of thing. But when you listen to the lyrics, it paints such a vivid, specific picture that you feel like it must be true, even if it's a heightened, surreal version of the truth.
He starts by asking the audience, have you ever been down to Max's place? And then he just introduces the cast. And what a cast it is.
Let's run through them. We have Max himself in his finest suit, a lover of the Lord with scripture tattoos.
A religious bar owner in a fine suit with scripture tattoos. I mean, that is a character you cannot invent.
Then there's a midget upstairs throwing whiskey bottles from a screen window.
Pure chaos. Just pure, beautiful chaos.
Three old ladies with hard tongues. A gypsy lady with two web toes.
A Hell's Angel bouncer. And, of course, Sebastian behind the counter, who he calls the man behind the man.
It's like a Fellini movie set in Alaska. It's grotesque and colorful and vibrant. It just captures the melting pot nature of a frontier bar where all these disparate, lost souls collide in one room.
And the lyrics get even wilder from there. He starts referencing biblical figures in these completely absurd situations.
Noah building a boat out of the backyard. Moses asleep while kids throw rocks. Samson looking for his girlfriend.
He's elevating the drunks and the outcasts of this bar to mythical status. He's saying, this bar is biblical. This chaos is ancient and holy.
And the refrain that ties it all together is just staggering. What the hell is God? I'm going to be somebody.
That line stops me in my tracks every time. First, where the hell is God?
Uh-huh.
It connects back to that search for meaning for light that we heard in Melissa's songs. But then, I'm going to be somebody.
It's a declaration of existence, of defiance. Even here, in this dive bar, amidst the flying whiskey bottles and the web-toed gypsies, I matter. I am going to be somebody.
And the energy on the tape is just infectious. You can hear the crowd getting into it.
The guitars from Pete and Romero are just driving it harder and harder. It sounds like a party that is teetering on the edge of spiraling completely out of control. It captures the frantic energy of a long winter night where everyone is just trying to feel something.
And then, just like that, it's over. The song ends. They sign off. Happy Halloween. Come check us out Sunday.
It snaps you right back to reality. The spell is broken. The house lights come up. It was just a gig. It was just one Halloween night back in 1997.
So that begs the big question. What happened to Forest Folk? Did they find their light? Did Brian ever come down from the tangerine skies?
Well, as is so often the case with these fleeting moments, the band itself was very short-lived.
The notes say that Brian and Melissa were a couple, but they broke up.
And the aftermath of that breakup, it sort of reflects their songs,
yeah,
in a way. Brian disappeared from view. He just drifted off, maybe like the cowboy or the stew bum in his own songs. We don't really know where he went. He just rode that steel horse to somewhere else.
And Melissa?
Melissa stayed. She put down roots in Girdwood. She continued to write music and perform under the name Homegrown with a friend of hers named Dawn on bass. In a way, she found that home society she was singing about.
Wow. It's a bittersweet ending, but it feels...
Yeah.
Right, somehow. The duo couldn't survive, but the music survived in this box.
It does. This tape, Forest Folk, Songs from the Wood, it's a perfect time capsule. It caught them right at that intersection, before the breakup, before the drift. It captured the specific chemistry of their two voices and the specific atmosphere of that bar on that night.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? I mean, how many other tapes like this are out there? How many other Brians and Melissas poured their hearts out into a microphone in some smoky bar or remote cabin, and the only proof that it ever happened is a dusty cassette in a forgotten cardboard box.
The world is full of them. That's the real beauty of archives, like the Mochi tapes. They remind us that creativity is happening everywhere, all the time, even in the most remote corners of the map. And sometimes, if you're just incredibly lucky, someone hits record.
Well, I'm certainly glad Mochi hit record on this one. It's been a trip, literally and figuratively, from the desperate search for sunlight to the psychedelic tangerine skies.
Absolutely. Keep searching for the light.
That's going to do it for this deep dive into the Mochi tapes. We'll be back next time to pull another cassette from the box and see what other sounds are hiding in the Girdwood Valley.
Until then, keep listening.
Now since I met you, things they've seemed to change. And now it feels like I'm living my life in a dream. And if I could really kiss the sky, if you weren't there, I wouldn't have the reasons why. I think that our souls were once together in heaven. Danced in the clouds and they flew with the doves. And I think if we could look at the end of the rainbow, you see that the treasure is that we're in love. 'Cause when I see your eyes I want to cry, and then I see your legs and I want to beg, and then I feel like I'm having a good day. Have been surrounded by angels, and the flowers around us have never seemed to lose their smell. And I think if we could go back to the time of creation, you'd see we've been together since the first raindrop fell. When I see your eyes, I want to cry, and then I see your legs, and I want to beg, and feel like I'm having a good day. Now standing next to you is like being in the sunshine, and the pictures in the clouds are telling our stories again. Look into the future, you see we'll be together till the end. When I see your eyes I want to cry, and then I see your legs and I want to beg, and then I feel like I'm having a good day. And then I see your lips and I want to kiss, and then I see your eyes and I want to cry, and then I feel like I'm happy deep inside.
Yeah.
I'm looking at life through rose-colored glasses. Even though things, they don't always go my way. Yet I'm trapped in a maze of ever-changing faces.
Become a war.
Social warfare.
Ooh, what Thank you.
Now there's head rushes and there's trips that kill. And there's micro dots, yeah, they're nasty little pills. You're gonna have to eat the shrooms, cause you know you'll be born again and again and again. It's going so crazy in my brain. Lately I feel so damn insane. But I see turquoise mountains and tangerine skies and dappled golden meadows where weasels abide. And bushes with laughter and trees that can walk. And children that sing with the flowers that talk. And there's a dingo wheat field and burnt Sienna stars and a sun wrapped in silver spreading wisdom afar. And there's a deep purple path through the forest green.
Bam, bam, bam.
Black Betty had the groove.
Bam ba dam.
Oh yeah, she knew.
Bam ba dam.
Black Betty, she could sing.
Bam ba dam.
She was one hot thing.
Bam ba dam.
Oh, Black Betty.
Bam ba dam.
Oh, Black Betty. Bam ba dam. Black Betty had a child. Damn thing gone wild. Bam ba dam. Said it wasn't none of mine.
Bam ba dam.
Damn thing gone blind.
Bam ba dam.
Oh,
Black Betty.
Bam ba dam.
Ah, oh, we're being bombed.
I can't. Town Sally?
They were from Soldotna, you guys, and down in Soldotna, there's only, in all the years that I lived there, there's only one bag lady, and she died when I was a kid, and now there's like one other bag lady, and so this is a song about
that
the two.
That might not be a lady.
Yeah, that might not, the second one isn't exactly a lady, but this is about those two people.
Downtown Sally walk around at night, singing opera so loud and gay, and Lady Lute, she'd steal my food, even though she graduated from Yale. 'Cause downtown Sally, Sally was a guy.
Sometimes the sun never seems to shine.
Has got on his finest suit. He's a lover of the Lord with scripture tattoos. Thank you. I said, do something to be somebody, do something, and Daddy said, do something to be somebody, boy. Daddy said, do something to be somebody, do something, and Daddy said, do something to be somebody, boy. Somebody do something, and Daddy said, do something to be somebody, do something, and Daddy says, do something to be somebody, boy. The guy put money down by the liquor store. He sat at home wondering why they were poor. And Noah's building a boat out in the backyard. And everybody's wondering where the hell is God. Where the hell, where the hell, where the hell is God. Where the hell, where the hell, where the hell, where the hell. Is down at the barber, he's cutting his hair. His girlfriend Delilah, he cannot find nowhere that damn Delilah. And Moses is passing drink down at the bar. And everybody's wondering where the hell is gone. Where the hell, where the hell, where the hell is gone. Where the hell, where the hell, where the hell, where the hell.
Where the hell, God's
where the hell, where the hell is God?
left. He's gonna travel around the world, and the latter turns out to be a real naughty girl. The kids are all throwing rocks at Moses as he sleeps. Mary lost a baby and Jesus is dead. Sam's pissed off cause the mama shit is dead. Everybody laughing cause the Noah cannot swim.
Hey, that was Forest Folk. Come check Thank them you. Out Sunday. They're going to be playing.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you very much.